Welcome back in the press row here on ESPN 105.1 The Zone. David Pascal, Jay Greason, Wells Guthrie producing the show. Hoping everybody out there is having a terrific, terrific Tuesday. Well, it is a pleasure to welcome into press row for the first time John McKechnie. He is the college football editor at rotowire.com, which for years and years, about two decades worth, has been absolutely synonymous with fantasy sports. John, thank you so much for joining us. How are you today?
Hey, guys. Doing great. I'm happy to be on with y'all.
Hey, if I'm on a college fantasy pool and I've already drafted Tate Martell, what should I do?
Well, you obviously haven't been following our rankings all summer, but yeah. I mean, I had my suspicions about him just kind of being this glorified 7-on-7 guy, and it seems to be bearing out that way. So, I mean, doesn't it just feel like it's written in the stars he's going to be playing for Lane Kiffin sooner rather than later?
We could see that. Yeah. I mean, who knows? He's been all over. Obviously, that would be a same part of the country. He seems to be touching all the bases all over. But, John, when you talk about – and I'm not a guy that – Jay and Wells, our producer, play a lot of fantasy football. I don't. But I'm curious about some things just from a novice standpoint. If I'm in a 10-member league – how deep would you go before taking someone who puts up all those numbers like Patrick Mahomes?
Because everyone's roster is so loaded when you are playing in a 10-team type of format, Mahomes becomes justifiable, in the late second, early third, depending on how you want to approach it, or if your league is like a 6 points per passing touchdown, then I think he reaches that value, but quarterback is so deep. I mean, anywhere up to like from quarterback 1 to quarterback 18 could end up being viable in a 10 teamer. Anyone from quarterback 1 to 14, I'd say is guys that you can feel comfortable starting on a given week. So you can be the guy that's the Mahomes guy in your league if you're in a 10 teamer, but I mean, you can just wait a little bit. You can wait until a 7th, 8th round, start going after like your Baker Mayfields, your Russell Wilsons, maybe even your Cam Newtons.
All right, there's so many off-the-field situations going on right now. And a lot of people listening are about to get in their various drafts, but when you're talking about the Ezekiel Elliott's, Antonio Brown's, Melvin Gordon's, how do you weigh the risk of those guys?
What I like to do is I like to look at the average draft position over the last week on this one website, the NFFC, and to play in those, like, you know, you have to have a bit of a stake in it. There's a buy-in. So, like, these are very kind of real ADPs. People are putting their money on the line. So these ADPs or average draft positions are no joke. And according to those guys, Ezekiel Elliott's draft status has been largely unaffected. He's not the slam dunk number 2 pick anymore. He's more closely going to, like, number 4, you know, the guys that are less risk-averse. Like a McCaffrey or a Kamara go ahead of him now. But Zeke's still a top 5 guy, and I tend to agree with the market on that one. When it comes to Gordon, he keeps plummeting. He can go as low as into the mid to late third round in most drafts. That situation really, really concerns me. That's one where if I'm drafting from here on forward, I'm probably not going after Melvin Gordon. I'm that worried about the holdout, and I think the Chargers have a lot of leverage with Eckler and Justin Jackson to where they can get by without him in a way. And then when it comes to Antonio Brown, anyone that claims to have a read on what he's going to do from minute to minute, let alone day to day, is lying to you. I can't really get behind someone that's that erratic. So when you're choosing between him or like a Mike Evans or T.Y. Hilton, the choice is made for you, basically. I'm just avoiding Antonio Brown at that price.
All right, I guess according to your Twitter, you're a Georgia guy. What about Todd Gurley? How confident are you that he can produce, or has he dropped given the wear and tear on him?
Yeah, I mean, it is a knee issue that's going to be with him for the rest of his playing career. But it seems like, you know, the sort of panic that surrounded his narrative coming into the summer shortly after they drafted Darrell Henderson in the third round has kind of died down a little bit. You really haven't heard a ton about like people panicking about his knees. So he is going a little bit towards the mid to late second round, and that's a price that I like him at. You're choosing between him or like a Dalvin Cook who has injury issues of his own right, or Joe Mixon who, for as good as he is, and obviously he doesn't have the durability concerns, he's running behind the league's worst offensive line by a pretty fair margin. I mean, they lost their first round pick. And Jonah Williams, they're going to be a mess back there. So Gurley's going to be running in a great system once again, running against non-loaded boxes. Even if he's on a bit of a pitch count, I still think he's worth it at that price tag, right around, you know, pick 18 or so.
You're listening to John McKechnie of RotoWire, which of course has been synonymous with fantasy sports for the last couple of decades. You're listening to John here on Press Row on ESPN 105.1 The Zone.
John, how many fantasy leagues are you in?
Too many.
Ballpark, I mean, like dozen or more or what?
It might climb up to that region. I've done four drafts so far. I got one tomorrow, another one next week. So I think when it's all said and done, and when I'm, you know, sitting with my friends doing my home league the last weekend before the season starts, I think it'll be like nine official season long leagues. And then I have some other, you know, like pools, like side bets, spread picks, survivor leagues, that sort of stuff to attach to it. So it ends up being around eight or nine with a couple other, you know, fun things attached to it.
If I gave you over under on investment before the first NFL toe meets leather, if I said you've put 10 grand into leagues and survivor pools and what, parlay bets and whatever else, is that fair, or am I overstating it?
I am working on a fantasy sports writer salary, so I can't quite put that much into it.
Okay.
You know, we're pushing towards the four digits there. I think by the time that we're past Labor Day, I'm really into it. I mean, you know, you got to practice what you preach. You got to be in on it.
I'm curious, with your role as the college football editor at a place like at RotoWorld, RotoWire, how are you surprised that college football fantasy sports has not taken off more? Or, I mean, are you more of a draft analyst? What is kind of the college football editor role there mean?
Okay, so it definitely lands in more of the niche sphere than you know, obviously NFL or MLB or NBA even. But with Yahoo launching their college fantasy game this past season, where their player universe is the Power Five teams plus Notre Dame, so that's 65 teams, so that's about double your player universe from the NFL. That got some traction last year. I do the projections for that, so I'm very involved and invested in the success of that. I think that year two is going to be a big leap forward as far as that is concerned, and also with DraftKings and FanDuel bringing back the college football game this past season. That was a huge success. That was one where, you know, big contests were being filled left and right. So from a DFS, daily fantasy sports perspective, college fantasy is very viable. We're still kind of waiting for the season-long to hit, but I think some of the aversion comes from, you know, like, how am I supposed to know who the Rice third string running back who goes off is? Well, you know, if you play in one of those Yahoo leagues where it's just the Power Five, you know, you kind of swim down the chances of getting burned on stuff like that. And, you know, you're actually watching the players that you're using in your fantasy game. So I expect it to continue to grow. It might not explode, but, you know, I think it is a really fun game. And I think if you haven't tried it, but you got some curiosity, definitely worth it. And, you know, where you guys are, you and a couple of your friends want to make like an SEC only league or SEC Pac-12, you can do that as well.
All right. If you were going Power Five plus Notre Dame, Jonathan Taylor has to be the Saquon Barkley of that draft, right?
Yes, he's our number one skill position guy. It's really not even that close. You know, some of the other quarterbacks out there, I mean, Justin Fields, Jalen Hurts, you know, based on either talent or scheme or both, those are guys that are right up there. Rondale Moore, the receiver out of Purdue, is right up there as well. We got a few other guys, Tylan Wallace out of Oklahoma State, Jalen Rager out of TCU, or other just kind of explosive players who are just super key to their offenses. So they all kind of help round out that top 10.
All right, my man. I put out on social media the other day and got a handful of these kind of speed questions from folks getting ready for drafts. You ready?
Let's do it.
All right. How early would you draft Kareem Hunt?
10th round if I was a guy that didn't like Nick Chubb, but if I am buying on Nick Chubb, I'm not going after Kareem Hunt.
Favorite late round quarterback?
Usually it's like a Kyler Murray, I would say. I think he fits that mold.
Best defense not in Chicago?
Probably Baltimore's.
Bigger divide between Mahomes and the number two QB or Travis Kelce and the number two tight end?
That's tough. I think it's probably between Mahomes and the number two quarterback. I think Ertz is close enough to win that argument for the Kelce one.
Best rookie not named Kyler Murray to pick?
It would be probably Josh Jacobs in Oakland, but I mean, we haven't really seen super glowing reports from him, so kind of check status on him, but I do like Jacobs for now.
Is Le'Veon Bell a top seven pick?
Yes.
All right, and this one I really like, so you got a little more time on this one. Draft strategy question. Would you rather be at the start of a run at a non-running back position or at the tail end of a run and try to go some zig while everybody else zags?
Yeah, I think, you know, either of those make sense. Like, you know, be the guy that starts that second tier of tight end run. I'd like to be the guy that's starting that. Once someone gets like an O.J. Howard, then, you know, that starts to flow where more tight ends start to fly off the board. At that point, if I'm on the back end of a run, then I almost always zag. I hate to be the guy that goes ahead and just gets like the seventh best option just because the room dictates otherwise, even if it like makes you go against your own rankings. So don't be a sucker for it. If you see a bunch of guys flying off the board, just go ahead and you know, use that to get a player that you're getting value at a different position.
John, the first year you played fantasy football and the very first guy you picked?
I think it was 2007. I started a league with my high school buddies, and everyone thought I cheated because I got the first pick, and it was LT.
And he only went for like 12 billion points.
It was a good year.
John, listen, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate all the insight, and best of luck for a good year.
All right, fellas, thanks a lot for having me on.
All right, John McKechnie of RotoWire, the college football editor, 648-1051 is the number. When we come back, we're shifting from football to NASCAR. Austin Dillon, your 2018 Daytona 500 champion, will join us when Press Row continues here on ESPN 105.1 The Zone.